Hello, I'm Harry Bucknell. Thank you for downloading this podcast from ABF, the Soldiers' Charity. For this edition of General Talk, we travelled to the Army Wargaming Symposium being held at the Royal Military Academy, Sandhurst, which was being attended by my guest for this programme, Warrant Officer Class 1, Paul Carney, the Army Sergeant Major and Senior Warrant Officer of the British Army. Army Sergeant Major Carney is the third incumbent to be appointed to the post, which was established in 2015, and he has held since the 3rd of August 2021, prior to which he was the Command Sergeant Major of the Field Army. Just as the Chief of the General Staff is the professional head of the British Army, so the Army Sergeant Major, who reports directly to him, is the top professional soldier. His position as such focuses on the being of soldiers and the art of soldiering, in all its various forms from concept to development and conduct. In particular, he takes a keen interest in the training and progression of the junior non-commissioned officer, that great first step on the career rung which, depending on how it is managed, can either be a stairway to the stars or a ladder to ignominy. Of leadership, he says, we should always be looking to develop ourselves, make ourselves more professional, and learn from within ourselves and from our allies. A sapper by birth and combat engineer by trade, the Army Sergeant Major admits to having a soft spot for explosives. I hope you enjoy the programme.
Now, you come from Gosport family. Why didn't you join the Royal Navy?
Well, both my parents were both Army, but for short periods of time. So my mum joined, but left because she was pregnant with me. So rules have changed already. Mm. And my dad done a short time with the Royal Engineers, including some of the rehabilitation work down in the Falklands. But it wasn't even that influence. It was my granddad that was in the Navy, Navy rugby player, PTI. He used to take me to the Royal Tournament in London. And so going around those stands, seeing the Marines, ABSAL, and then seeing the Army stands, that basically hooked me up. And so from about 8 years old, the Army was for me.
You are a proud Royal Engineer. You were appointed Army Sergeant Major on the 3rd of August 2021. You've been in post now 2 years. Before that, you were Regimental Sergeant Major of 2-2 Engineer Regiment based in Tidworth. What's the difference between being a Regimental Sergeant Major and an Army Command Sergeant Major?
Firstly, the RSM role is very defined after hundreds of years, and is very much about being that advisor, assuring the CO, and being their conscience. And those three things are probably very similar with the Army Command Sergeant Major, except I do that for not only CGS, but his directors and DCGS, and the rest of the team in Army Headquarters. I guess the difference with the RSM is that you have that touch point throughout. You know a lot of your soldiers, you've trodden the same path that they have, you become a mentor. And there should be, in my eyes, that one-to-one activity regular with your sergeant majors, with your senior NCOs and your junior NCOs. And that support of mentoring, coaching the young officers within that regiment or battalion. I think with the Army Sergeant Major, it's about trying to support policy change. It's about highlighting those problems that are happening in ground level to ensure that they get through the hierarchical structure and get through to the people that can actually make change to them. So I guess it's that span that you're looking after, and then it's acting as that pivot between what I'd say is the tactical level, battalions and regiments, up to the highest level of Army Headquarters.
What attracted you could have been commissioned 6 years ago?
So I think I'll start by saying I think our Army works really well on the basis that it has soldiers, officers and late entry officers, and everything works well in threes. But I'm really proud to be a professional soldier. And I remember being in an RSM, attending my first RSM's conference, and seeing at the front of the audience were these new things called the Command Sergeant Majors. And Mr. Glenn Houghton was at the front as Army Sergeant Major at the time. And so the impact that they had, the ability that they had to speak truth to power, blew my mind. And it was a concept that I fell in love with from day one and made clear to my CO and in turn my group commander that that was the route that I wanted to take. We always talk about that ranks and the difference between officers and soldiers. I'm really proud to be a professional soldier. And maybe in the future, my new career will be as a professional commissioned officer. But at the moment, I want to take advantage of the skill sets that I've built, the ability to bring a diversity of thought to the headquarters that I wouldn't be able to if I was a late entry commissioned officer.
In the old days, legends like Regimental Sergeant Major T.B. Britton, who ran Mons Cadet School, he was for 19 years of a 36-year career at W01. You are now at the very pinnacle of your career. You will never have that influence ever again. Do you think, in a way, that now the rank of W01 is often seen as a stepping stone to becoming an officer, do you think it rather dilutes the great role of the Regimental Sergeant Major as a W01 in general?
No. And I think that's I think the importance is understanding that separate career. With the Regimental Sergeant Majors course that we run and that was first initiated by Glenn Houghton when he became the Army Sergeant Major, the importance of developing those Regimental Sergeant Majors, I take the time to thank them because it is a difficult job. And I tell them they're on a really high, really narrow pedestal with people throwing stuff at them. When you put that big badge on, you become a target. Because you're going to make some people uncomfortable. You're going to have to make calls that other people don't want to do. So I think that the strength of the Regimental Sergeant Major is still holds that level of pinnacle to it. And we have to remember that a late entry commission isn't the right path for everyone. A good soldier won't necessarily make a good officer. And so I certainly want to make it clear that we should never be diluting that role of Regimental Sergeant Major, especially now that I think with the new generations, that role becomes ever more complex.
When the RAS man comes along, it's a time for people to get scurrying about, and you see all sorts of activities from people polishing boots to clearing up areas and so on. The Academy Sergeant Major here, he's got the Academy. The Garrison Sergeant Major of London District, he's got London. The Garrison Sergeant Major of Edinburgh, he's got Edinburgh. You didn't have a platform, so how therefore do you get your force of personality to be imprinted on the army as a whole? It's a very difficult job you've got.
It is, and as you said, you don't hold any sort of ground, as it were. And I think I'll just quickly mention Mr. Stokes. So when people talk to me about being the senior soldier, I acknowledge that. I say I might be the senior soldier, but Mr. Stokes is like the godfather. A wise sage that is always there to offer me advice in the same way that Garrison Sergeant Major of Scotland and the Academy Sergeant Major in Sandhurst. But I think that's where my platform is and that's my ability to add influence. It's not the individual character, but it's the strength of the network. So it's the Garrison Sergeant Majors, it's the other Command Sergeant Majors at the 3-star and 2-star level. And then it's the ability to speak to an RSM at a click of a finger. If you imagine, a lieutenant colonel can't just chat to CGS. Now, I'm not relating myself to CGS, but the information, the ability to disseminate that really quickly and fast is what we can do with our network. So I think it's not the strength of the Army Sergeant Major, but the strength of that senior soldier network.
You sit on the executive committee of the Army Board, surrounded by generals and all manner of stars. Do you get a fair hearing?
Yes, all the time. And sometimes I've probably overstepped. And when I say overstepped, my point was come across maybe with the brashness of a soldier, not necessarily with the politeness of an officer. And other members of that committee have helped develop me on that.
That surely is the reason you're there, to overstep the mark, to make the generalships and their highnesses up in the gods go, oh, blimey, we missed a truth there, didn't we?
Well, it is my right to bring that truth to power and to hold people to account. But again, there's right ways of doing it, so ears stay open, and then there's wrong ways where you close people off. And for me, I saw it as a real benefit when some of the senior officers took me to one side and helped me out. challenged me on my challenge and helped develop me rather than push me to the side and stop my voice being heard. So I get the opportunity to speak at any moment of the executive committee, and CGS will always bring me in for my opinion.
You mentioned earlier on about mentoring. I know that you place a great deal of emphasis on junior non-commissioned officer training. What do you think the status of our leadership training in the British Army is today? How do you see it being improved?
So I think we've moved on leaps and bounds, and I remember being a young squadron sergeant major when General Carter brought in the Centre for Army Leadership. I remember being excited by it, and when my RSM came back from the opening, I was really inquisitive and wanted to know what went on. But one thing it did make me realise just in that one conversation was probably how parts of the regimental system have still stovepiped our leadership. And so what an engineer might see as natural might not be the same for an infantry or a gunner or a medic. And that stuck with me and imprinted on me. And as I moved through these roles, the importance I found from developing leadership across CAP badges, across capabilities, was really important to me. So I think, firstly, the introduction of the Centre for Army of Leadership is fantastic. I think they're doing some great things. And they ebb and flow. Sometimes they start moving up to the operational level of leadership. And then, as we saw this year with the junior conference, they brought it back down to junior commanders again. And that's fantastic. We should always be striving to do more. We should always be looking to develop ourselves, make ourselves more professional, and learn from within ourselves, but then also our international allies.
You yourself have a BA, Arms in Leadership, from Northumbria University, which is a result of your own training and development within the British Army. What was it that made you want to go on to get a degree in leadership?
So more and more warrant officers are now taking advantage of the steps that they get from the Army Leadership and Development Programme and using that as a gateway to do degrees in such things as leadership and management. For me, there was an element of making myself better for my role. So I started it as a Sergeant Major, finished it as an RSM, using some of my work to influence that project. And then there was an element of future-proofing myself. I think our soldiers at all levels will make fantastic veterans and civilians. But your experience and a good chat can only get you so far. You need professional qualifications to be able to open those doors. And that's why I actively encourage all soldiers to be thinking that every day is a resettlement day.
One other thing is this army of the talents. And that is where people don't care whether you're straight, gay or whatever. They just go on with it. Do you think that now is behind us?
Not completely. I think we just always have to remember, and we have to kind of continue to push the message, because we recruit from such a broad range, don't we? And so you may be recruiting a soldier that's been brought up as a racist, a sexist, a everythingist, and then we only get 14 weeks to bed in those values and standards. It's not enough time. So you continue have to push it. I think society has moved on. It was great yesterday. So our new weight carrying system, we just trialled a secondary spine that links your webbing and your kit so that you can move the weight from the shoulders onto the hips and you can kind of change it as you're moving along the way. We've pulled it out because people aren't using it. It's another bit of kit I've got to carry. I don't want to carry any more weight. But the conversations have moved on from it's about the man as opposed to, well, women's body shape's different. So this kit wasn't designed for women because it was originally designed for dismounted close combat. But this was before women came in. Well, guess what? We need to start redesigning. It's good.
Do you think that the soldier is now a more rounded individual and more aware of the circumstances in which he or she fights or works? Do you think that degrades the fighting spirit of the army?
So I have a worry about competition and that will to win, because I think that's one of the benefits of the regimental system. If you're 2-power, you want to be better than 3-power. But para-reg want to be better than the rifles. I've always said the regimental system and its ability to breed competition is what makes us great at fighting. I worry that we're just not robust and we don't have that grrr element anymore. That's I really do worry that...
And unless you run operations, you haven't got that experience.
Exactly that. And I always ask the question now, and when I was younger, we didn't have phones, we weren't allowed TV, so we ended up just scrapping all the time. You dealt with an issue with a scrap. But now it feels like they either don't fight or they stab each other. And so I wonder how many soldiers have ever been punched square on the nose. But yeah, so I worry about that grip, because we want to keep people in. We don't want to lose people. So you don't make stuff as tough. And you're almost, I think, pushing the boundaries till you go on operations, till you go on those big level exercises. Hard stuff creates good stories that they can then talk about at the weekend. Yeah.
You, of course, you're Army Sergeant Major, not only the regular Army, but also the Reserve Army. A lot of the Army now will rely on reserves come mobilisation. Do you think that they'll be able to fulfil that role come times of operational need?
So I think we haven't listened to our reserves enough. These are people that volunteer their spare time to do the job that we do day to day, and we should acknowledge that. I don't think we should tie them up with the same red tape and expect them to meet our standards, because they just don't have the time to. So I think that we should create an offer that suits both ourselves and in turn suits them. What is going to bring them in? What's going to make them feel wanted? You could argue that the modern day factory job might be a call centre, or it might be for the likes of Amazon or these sort of big delivery companies. What's going to take them, rather than just going home and sitting in front of the TV or playing five-a-side football, what's going to bring them to come and want to play our game and be part of us? And I still don't think we listen to the people enough to decide what that is. Because whilst the laws are what they are, it will remain a volunteer force. And if they're not treated well, then it's a tough thing to sell. A CO of a reserve unit, so a regular CO of a reserve unit said to me, it's the toughest element of leadership that he's ever had. Because when you serve in a regular unit, you give an order, that's a lawful order. If you don't lead correctly in the reserves, they just don't turn up the next day.
That there have been issues with three parent, also issues that almost kind of stand us with discipline and issues with training. What's your take on that?
So CGS had just started the job when the stuff with three parent came out, and I thought it was great. We needed reminding that actions have consequences, and our behaviours are accountable. We should, I believe, hold ourselves to a higher standard than society, because we represent our country in the same way that we'd expect professional footballers to act correctly because they travel the world and they represent our country. We travel the world and represent our country, so we should hold a higher standard. So I thought it was fantastic to see what CGS did. And then I went down to see Free Para to see the reactions, and I thought it was a great demonstration of the professional unit that they were, that they accepted CGS's decision and were moving forward and deciding how they got themselves, made themselves better and got on top of the problem. And I think that's a sign of a professional unit, how you deal with the problem was a great sign. And then that comes back to Sandhurst with General Stenning, the work that he's done here to professionalise what we do, because we forget sometimes we're developing future leaders, and sometimes we can lose sight that we're not necessarily doing everything right as we should do. And I think the things that he's implemented now, looking to increase more senior NCOs from other CAP badges to come and be instructors, adding diversity of thought in the process, more weight put on the platoon commanders within Sandhurst, because the colour sergeants are seen as as the person to sort of copy, but actually their role models should be those officers, not the colour sergeants. So I really like what General Stenning's done there to re-empower those platoon commanders so that those officers have someone to look up to.
You specialised in combat engineering and, as I said, ultimately ended up as RSM of 2-2 Engineer Regiment. Blowing up or building bridges, which do you prefer?
So I was actually an instructor in both building bridges and blowing them up, but I've got a soft spot for explosives.
It's an unhealthy interest in pyrotechnics, I think, is how I say it. You are a trustee of ABF, the Soldiers' Charity, and I know you enjoy events training. I'm just going to get a packet of Haribo's here, because I read in the Soldier magazine that you like Haribo. So would you like a Haribo, Army Sergeant Major?
I will never turn down sweets.
While I ask the next question, I just say the view that these Haribo's are the Army Sergeant Major's favourite sweet. We know this because we read in the Soldier magazine. And I know also that you took part in ABF, the Soldiers' Charity's Cash and Yomp, which is 54 miles over the Cairngorms on the 3rd to 4th of June. How did you find that experience? I know that you said that you weren't quite as fit as you wanted to be because you've been a bit stuck in the office.
So I absolutely loved every single minute of it. And I'm doing some work both with the ABF and with the Army to actually use it as a tool to develop our soldiers, to create awareness of the charity. But the event itself, 54 miles, is a tough distance, and especially in those conditions. So the first time I'd done it last year, I saw a young 18-year-old that joined me, and I saw the amount of physical effort he put in and the mental robustness he needed. First time he'd ever hit a wall and continued on the ability for him to walk on blistered feet for 14 miles. And I kind of had a moment, and I spoke with the CEO and said, I think we need more soldiers on this. This is a fantastic event, and it's a tough event, achievable, but still very difficult. And so I kind of wanted to make it real. So last year I wore full issued army equipment to show that it's suitable to stand up to those conditions. And I carried a weighted kit up to about 12 kilograms. This year, again, I wanted to do a little bit more. And so I said I'd wear my body armor as well. So I started off with 23 kilograms with the body armor and the weight. And at the 13-mile point, the first big water stop, I realized from my watch that I'd already burnt over 3,000 calories, and my heart rate had been sitting at about 80, 85. So I made a sensible decision. I ditched the body armour and continued on. And actually, that because of that earlier mileage, it was really tough. I think I'm the only person that hit the silver point and then got fitter and stronger. And actually, my last third was really quick, caught up some time. But the event itself was just outstanding. The ABF run a fantastic event. They have everything covered from the safety. It was the hottest day in Scotland that year, and you had hundreds, almost thousands of people on those mountains from 15 years old all the way up to, I think, 70-something, and no injuries from that. That's how well run the event is, and everyone's just in a good mood.
The Army's national charity, ABF, the Soldiers' Charity, the Army's national charity. Will you be encouraging more units to take part next year while you finish your Haribo?
So we were able to quadruple the serving numbers this year. So from about 75 up to 100, over 300. My aim is to quadruple that again, and hopefully we can get it to around the 1,200 mark. And we changed some elements of policy so that people attend it not for the fundraising element, although they can still raise money, but more for the physical endurance element. And hopefully that will unlock more people, and that we can make military attendance more of a competition and a reason to go up there.
We see in the outside world an increasingly unsettled outside world with the Ukrainian war still still ongoing. The British Army has played a pivotal role in preparing troops for the counteroffensive that is now taking place against the Russian forces. What is your view on the work that we've done so far and the work we will do in support of Ukraine?
So I think I'll start with outstanding. There is no other word, and a cold chill down my spine. I've been fortunate enough to see people in Poland, Eastern Europe, in the handling facilities where they bring the Ukrainians into the country, to the multitude of sites where we're training them with our international allies. So I'm very fortunate that I've got to see so much of it. And it's amazing. It's amazing to see our junior NCOs, our senior NCOs, delivering training every single day to people that are going to use it, are going to take those skills on and have to replicate what they've been taught. And that's imprinted onto our soldiers. They know the good that they're doing. Soldiers like to complain. I have not heard one complaint about the work that they're doing with regards to training the Ukrainians. That handling facility holds 200 Ukrainians a time on a flight. It kits them in full military equipment and then moves them onto those training sites. I see lance corporals and corporals doing that job. It's just unbelievable, and I buzz off of it every single day.
What would your advice be to a young person wanting to join the army today?
So firstly, to give it a go. We still continue to harbour this belief that the military is waking up at 6 in the morning, people continuing to shout at you, and marching up and down the drill square. That's as a guardsman, I know I'm playing to the audience. but we're a professional organisation, and I've been in the army 27 years now, so I'm naturally biased. I'm fortunate that my wife served 23 years, and when I talk to her, she's now a civilian and a veteran, and what she says to me is that the army, the thing she misses the most is it's an organisation that cares about people. Now, to some soldiers, it might not feel like that, but we do. We're a family. We care and look after each other and want to get the best. I think when you think of all the benefits that people can get from education and development, the instilling of discipline and professionalism, those things don't even cost money but have so much wider benefit to an individual. And you then put on top of that the opportunities to travel the world, be that on operations, exercises, or for sports and adventure training. This is an organisation that gives a lot, and I think if you join and you're willing to put your hand up and volunteer, you will get the best experience you can.
When you joined the army, you'd never been in an aeroplane. The first aeroplane you went in, you jumped out of. What's been the highlight of your 27 years so far?
I bounce between a few things. I think operations, live kinetic operations, living off the ground, feeling like you were having an impact on the Afghan people. I think being a sergeant major for a squadron is still my favourite job. I knew every single one of my soldiers. I could have influence on their lives. I could make them better, and I could cohere us as a team. And I really buzz off of that. And then the absolute privilege of being one of very few Army Sergeant Majors is unbelievable.
The senior warrant officer in the British Army today, Warrant Officer Class 1 Paul Carney, Army Sergeant Major. Thank you for being my guest on General Talk.
Thank you so much.
To learn more of the Army Sergeant Major's activities, initiatives and take on service life, you can read his monthly column, Ground View, in the Soldier Magazine online at soldiermagazine.co.uk. For further details of ABF the Soldiers Charity's annual Catherine Yomp in the Cairngorm Mountains of Scotland, or to listen to archive editions of General Talk and its sister programmes, please visit soldierscharity.org. And my thanks to Major Michael Townsend, Lieutenant Colonel Richard Eaton and Colonel Dominic Coombs for their help in the making of this programme. From me, Harry Bucknell, here in Dorset, thank you for listening And until next time, farewell. Wings, the Corps March of the Sappers, was played by the band of the Corps of Royal Engineers under the musical direction of Major E.H. Keeley. Series editors are Kath Mills and Neil Kernahan, with studio editing by Michael Stiglione. This has been a Gamekeeper production for ABF, the Soldiers Charity.
There, you brought me sweets. See, I told you they're my favourites. You put them in front of me. I go back to being 12 again. You can steal some more of your sweets.